also don't care about feminism. Your favorite show is Entourage.
To be honest, when I found out the patriarchy wasn't about horses, I lost interest anyway.
I wonder if I know what you mean.
I wonder if you wonder.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Maximum Film. It's episode 344, and hormones does not start with whore. It's your host, Sifi Wadiway, and in the booth with me are my friends. So let me introduce you to them. We have our amazing resident critic, Christmas Zaddy, Alonzo Duralde. What's good?
Ify, I'll tell you, this is a what's good for me that other people, you know, will be down for or not. But so, you know, I go to AMC theaters a lot, and they all now pretty much have what I call the magic Coke machine, you know, the touch screen, and they've got the gajillion different flavors, and it's a thing. And I like to have soda at movies, but I'm getting older. I don't want to have like a ton of sugar, and I don't like diet soda. So I've been trying to figure out, how do I navigate this? And here's what I figured out. They have, the Coca-Cola company has that AHA brand of sparkling water, and you can get the AHA unflavored in the Magic Coke machine. So I fill most of my cup with just plain fizzy water with no additives. And then I'll just, at the end of it, throw in just a splash of some high C. You could go Fanta if you want to go like even fizzier, you know, but just like a dollop, like enough to give me the flavor and a little sugar and a little sweet, yummy, yeah, but not like a big gloopy barrel of syrup. And it works for me, especially since I will very often go to See's Candy first and sneak in, you know, my own candy, because the stuff they have at the concession stand is garbage. But at least this way I don't have to feel guilty about like compounding my candy with a super sweet soda. So that's my what's good.
That's the exact level of recipe I'm interested in following, by the way. Yay high of sparkling water.
And a scooch.
And then
yes.
Some high, a little scooch of high C. That's
yes.
Awesome.
Look, we love delicious drinks. You know who's a delicious drink themselves? It's none other than the queen of the Midwest Super Festival program, producer Drea Clark. What's good?
Okay, I, as you know, as a woman of an elderly age, I still enjoy YouTube. There's a certain breed of YouTube follower or influencer that I like, and they are all people who do something. I love watching people be good at things. It brings me joy to watch people enjoy themselves. And I have found the most delightful Canadian, half of them are Canadian, more of them than half are Canadian probably, this very delightful Canadian named Ariel Bissette, whom I started watching because she's a deep book fanatic. She has a master's degree. She reads a ton. She makes great recommendations. At the beginning of the pandemic, she bought a house, only saw via photos, that's like from the 1800s farmhouse in Nova Scotia, and she's been redoing it. And I find her such a tremendous delight, largely because, you know, when you meet an elderly woman and you're like, this eccentric creative force, how funny is she? Big booming laugh, absolutely kind of insane, but just a joy. She is that, but in her 20s. Like watching an eccentric old woman in her formative years, fascinating. Like she's doing her house in all these beautiful colors. She describes, she'll finish every project she finished, and she's like, it's beautiful. She just loves things. Anyway, I find her a delight. The fact that she could biologically be my child is horrifying to me. But anyway, Ariel Bissette, just keep on reading and building your farmhouse. You crazy delight.
Drea, how are you not a skincare influencer on YouTube, given your reservoir of knowledge and your like on camera pop? I don't know how you're leaving that money on the table.
Thank you for flirting with me, Alonzo. It's always appreciated. I don't know. Maybe it's because I have two full time jobs and this.
Do you want to get free creams in the mail? It's all I'm asking.
Gah! Ooh, don't tell me that. Now I'm into it. I'm like, ooh, I got to talk to Ify. What kind of camera setup do I got? Free stuff? Yeah. I didn't even think of the free stuff.
Free stuff. Oh, yeah. Why influence otherwise?
It's so true. You find like Canadian skincare influencer? Duh, that's my goal. That's my gold right there. Gold ticket.
Oh, yeah. But, you know, Speaking of gold tickets, this is a gold ticket of a guest right here. Writer, critic, filmmaker, BJ Colangelo. What's good?
Hi. My good is that I am a simple lady. It does not take much to make me happy. I was cleaning out my closet today, and you know how when you clean out your closet, sometimes you find treasures in the back that they fell off a hanger 3 years ago and you forgot all about them? I found my velvet, crushed velvet purple dress. But it's not just a crushed velvet purple dress. It is styled so that I can look like Queen Beryl from Sailor Moon, but as like a glamorous dress. I thought this dress disappeared and was stolen and flew away and did what it does in its own time, but it was just in the bottom of my closet. So when people see me wearing this in public, just know that I feel better than I have in years in this dress.
I love that.
That's the $20 bill crumpled at the bottom of a pocket of clothes.
Oh, I was so excited because I felt it with my hand. I was like, oh, I know what dress this is. This is my Queen Beryl dress. Oh, I was thrilled.
I like this. Any outfit that requires that kind of specificity to describe.
It's one of those pop culture dresses that doesn't look like, oh, we put a print of pop culture on a dress. Like, if you know, you know. And if you don't know, then it's just a really pretty purple dress.
Nice.
Sweet.
Well, congratulations to you.
Thank you. Yes. Thank you.
Iffy, what's good?
Well, what's good with me is, well, you know, Warhammer Old World released not too far ago. We talked about it. I picked my little figures up, and now I'm back to painting. I got my Astral Templars. They're getting painted slowly but surely. Outside of that, going to Sketchfest. It was great. Had great shows with Paige Weldon. The big team had a great show, and we did Everything's Great with Demi Adejuyibe. So cannot appreciate more everyone who came out. And look, keep coming out to shows so I can keep doing them.
We're good. So proud of you, Iffy. Just getting out there and doing your jokes from your heart. I'm so, so proud.
Yeah. You know, jokes straight from the heart. But you know, today we got a hell of a show. We're singing along with the Queen Bees and Wannabes in the new Mean Girls. Then we'll cap off our 2-week musical event by predicting some future movie musical. But first, it's time for Itadic, our movie news segment that stands for Is This Important? Do I Care? Where we read through the week's movie news and answer that very question. Drea, why don't you go start this thing off?
I will! Challenge accepted! Okay, in 2005, an iconic movie prop was stolen from the Judy Garland Museum, one of four pairs of ruby slippers Ms. Garland wore while filming The Wizard of Oz. The slippers weren't recovered until 2018, and the thief, John Terry Martin, was arrested last year and pled guilty in October. Ahead of his sentencing next week, Martin has revealed his motive for stealing the slippers. He was led to believe that because the slippers were valued at $1 million, they must be covered in real rubies. Martin has never worked in the film industry. Martin's hopes were dashed when an appraiser told him they were actually covered in glass. The slippers are estimated to actually be valued at over $3 million, but only because of their cultural significance. Is this important? Do you care? And may I add the other detail in this article that, like, you guys, I love to be charmed, and I found it charming, is that this man more than once referenced how he thought of this as his one last robbery. What's the phrase?
Heist.
One last score. It was totally, yeah. He used the phrase one last score. And the idea of some like small town podunk thief using that phrase and being like, all right, I'm going to do one last score. And that score is going to be the red ruby slippers from a wizard. I mean, as thievery goes, that's kind of charming. Don't steal things.
I think the real story here is that we found the one person in America who's never seen The Wizard of Oz. and that's, you know, let's not bury that lead. A kind of astonishing, frankly, that once you get over the disappointment of them not being made of rubies, like, you still realize what you've got, right? No, yeah. I don't know.
They're like, I'm going to go ahead and give them back.
I don't know. I've met plenty of people that would watch that movie, and then I could go to them and say, what do you think those shoes are made of? And plenty of those sweethearts would say, rubies?
I have bad news for you about ruby red grapefruit.
I care about this because I feel like someone today who works at Ryan Murphy's office forwarded him this news break and then he ran and opened up Final Draft. Like, that's what I think. Like, we're going to get some weird movie.
American Crime Story.
Yeah, some American Crime Story about this guy stealing Judy Garland slippers.
American Crime Story, Ruby. That there's four sets, and like one's at the Smithsonian, one's another museum, one is like private collector, and I'm like, oh, you know, some weird wealthy stone cold crazy nut job owns those, and I can't wait to find out it's Ryan Murphy.
Yeah. Speaking of red things, back in 2022, after starring with Court Overstreet in Falling for Christmas, Lindsay Lohan signed a 2-picture deal with Netflix to make more Christmas movies. Details on the latest have now been released. She'll star alongside Ian Harding, Kristen Chenoweth, and Chris Parnell in a movie called Our Little Secret. In the movie, two exes are forced to spend Christmas together after realizing their new partners are siblings. Production has already begun. Is this important? Do you care?
I love everything about this. I'm watching it the second it comes out. I want you to know I'm going to be devastated if and when it's revealed that Chris Parnell is not either Lindsay Lohan's ex or current partner and instead just a dad. But the fact that the Lohan machine understands the just cosmic pairing with Kristen Chenoweth, like, that's the energy I want for her. That's what, you know, we're Team Lohan here. I want her to keep making things. And the idea that she's like, you know what? Not only do I have this whole setup with Netflix and I'm going to do these rom-coms, the timbre of star power and craziness that I'm looking for is Chenoweth. And I wish more people took that route.
And Chenoweth, by the way, Lohan is not the only one coming back to the Christmas at Netflix table here. Chenoweth had a very funny supporting role in Holidate, which was an Emma Roberts, Luke Bracey rom-com. So, yeah, I mean, the two of them have musical chops. So if they don't get to sing together in this, I do want to put them in a remake of Evil Under the Sun, playing the Maggie Smith and Diana Rigg roles. I think there's a lot of options we could go here.
That's solid. Can we copyright that? Yeah. Marissa, go copyright that.
Yeah, if they're not singing a Christmas song, I will be formulating a very all caps worded tweet.
We're just taking the
You don't want that Netflix. You don't want it.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So don't you dare. But what you should dare is head over to Sundance. It's kicked off celebrating its 40th birthday. By the time this episode airs, much of the Sundance Film Festival will have already happened. We've already had the premiere of Pathological, the short that I'm in. And I'm sure there are other stuff too. Sundance is celebrating its 40th edition of the fest this year. Over those years, Sundance has launched the careers of directors like Quentin Tarantino, Steven Soderbergh, and James Wan, just to name a few, and the fest has grown astronomically in prestige and scale since the 80s, but still focuses on independent film. This year's festival includes 31 directorial feature debuts. And, you know, as much as I joke about Drea being the gatekeeper of Sundance, it is the hard work of many people coming together to watch so many films. And as a exterior comedian, I feel free to say it's probably so many bad ones. But, you know, the cream rises to the top, and we all kind of froth at the mouth over these kind of early reviews for premieres that are happening at Sundance. And with all that being said, I'm going to ask, knowing the answer, is this important? Do you care?
Nobody better say no. I better not hear a single no in this room, young people.
Oh, I am feral for some of these movies, so I care a lot.
Oh, yeah.
I feel I know which some of them they might be, BJ, and you're not wrong, because Love Lies Bleeding is fantastic.
Oh, yes, and I'm so excited because I'm friend with Katie O'Brien's wife, and so me, Em, and Katie O'Brien are getting a lift session to really meet head out. And that's where the love is going to lie bleeding in the real world.
I first attended Sundance in 1995. And it's been a really fascinating arc of where this festival has gone. Because like the first year that I went, there was one party every night at a ski lodge with a local wedding band performing. And like you would see volunteers and movie stars in the same room. It was just this very kind of like, you know, small thing. And we were all there in this, you know, little town in Utah and making this thing go. And to see how it's just metastasized over the years and become this huge sort of celebrity thing and sponsorship thing and all the other things. But I think at its heart, you know, there is some really great programming there. A lot of great films come out of the festival. By the same token, I always feel compelled to tell, you know, filmmakers especially, your world is not over because you didn't get into Sundance. Also, if you did get into Sundance, you are not set to go. Might have made a crappy movie that got into Sundance anyway. It's happened. So, you know, it is a big thing, but it's not the big thing. But yeah, you can't look at the history of the last 35, 40 years of independent cinema and not look at Sundance, not just for the festival itself and it being a launching pad, but the labs, all the screenplays that were developed there and the producers and directors who came up through their educational program. So, you know, here, Sundance. Well done.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah, obviously I'm biased, but also the Park City side of things, you all know this, but I started at Slam Dance. So I started going to Park City in 99 and then eventually was producing and festival director there. I went for like 12, 13 years in a row. And the difference, like Alonso said, like I remember the years that the .com money came in. Yeah. And then it was not just that there were so many events. That's when there were tons of people that came with zero interest in film. And so, you know, there's just these cycles. And it's also really interesting the cultural impact of what can get so fevered when, you know, because I try not to go now in person. I'm lucky to see a lot of these things ahead of time. And I don't, it's more fun to be at fest with the film than with doing the grind of working a festival. And so you combine that with a lot of cold weather and everyone gets sick in Park City. It's delight. I did say watch stuff online if you can, because, you know, the festival, every year, so many of my favorites by the end of the year are still Sundance titles. And it is a good thing, like Alonso said, it's a great way to familiarize yourself with what's out there. But also, if you're someone interested in festival programming or the shape of things, it's not just about, there's no way to empirically say these are the best films, so we're going to program them. You're trying to do a lot more than that. You're curating talent and looking at a whole lineup and what do we have in every flavor for the lineup and who are we giving a leg up to and just all sorts of things. And anyway, I'm very proud of where Sundance has grown. I have the very smallest of parts of that, but it's wonderful to watch. I love hearing the buzz, but I will also echo Alonso that do not feel distraught if you don't get in and do not assume the grind on the film is not over until like a month after it comes out. So keep on going, filmmakers.
On Blu-ray.
That's what I mean. Yeah. Like it's a long road for everyone.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that is the truth about it. So on that note, we've danced in the sun as long as we could. And Park City still has some great slopes, but we're going to take a break. But when we come back, Mean Girls Can Sing Now.
From the Twisted Minds that brought you The Adventure Zone, Balance, and Amnesty, and Graduation, and Ethersea, and Steeplechase, and Ultra Space, and all the other ones, the McElroy brothers and dad are proud to reveal a bold vision for the future of actual play podcasting. It's called The Adventure Zone versus Dracula.
Yeah, we're going to kill Dracula's ass.
We're going to attempt. We haven't recorded all of it yet. We will attempt to kill Dracula's ass.
The Avengers M versus Dracula.
Yes, a season I will be running using the D&D 5th edition rule set. And there's two episodes out for you to listen to right now. We hope you will join us. Same bat time, same bat channel.
Bats. I see what you did there. everyone, and welcome back to Maximum Film. I'm your host, Ify Whitey-Way, and in the studio with me are...
Drea Clark.
BJ Colangelo.
Alonso Duralde.
Today's film was originally slated to premiere on Paramount Plus, but it was given a theatrical release date after testing well with audiences. It's based on the musical and the movie of the same name. It was directed by Samantha Jane and Arturo Perez Jr. and is, of course, a broad comedy with music. Drea, would you mind giving us a brief synopsis of 2024's Mean Girls?
Yes. So Mean Girls is set at a high school peopled by suspiciously old-looking students. We're following the exploits of a young woman named Katie, who has recently moved from Africa. She is trying to navigate social cliques, cultural mores, all sorts of things she doesn't understand. She does that with the help of two new friends that she just meets when she arrives, who also convince her that it would be a great idea if she befriends the Plastics, who are the most notorious and popular, but in that sort of unliked kind of way, group in the school. They are led by Queen Bee, Regina George, and she becomes more and more like them. And also there's something with math and something with a dude. Mean Girls!
Mean Girls!
And a bus.
And a bus.
All right. So when you first heard this movie was coming out, what did everyone think? Were you hyped because you knew it was about the musical? Did you think it was too soon for a remake? What's everyone thinking?
I hadn't. Has anyone here seen the musical?
On stage, I had not.
You have. Okay.
I have, yeah.
Nice. I had not. Obviously, I'd heard of it, and... We were just talking last week, I think, about how woefully ignorant this group is about what's happening on Broadway or anywhere in any of the blocks off of it. I wasn't familiar with the music at all. I was obviously very familiar with the original film. When I heard about it, I was glad that it was a take on of the musical and not... I would have been like, come on, Mean Girls? They just made that motion picture, settle down. So to have it be, oh no, it's actually exploring it in this whole new format. I mean, and with all of this new content because of the musical element. So it eliminated the too soon part of it for me. And then I was excited to hear the music because I hadn't heard that before.
I had very mixed feelings upon the announcement. It seemed inevitable because Mean Girls is turning 20 this year, so they've been kind of pressing on the nostalgia circuit. Like, there were Mean Girls sponsored toaster strudels a couple years ago, so it felt inevitable. But I was feeling a little about it because I don't think that the actual stage show is that strong. I think there are a couple of numbers that are really, really great, and then the rest of the songs are very forgettable. It also seemed weird that this got the movie musical treatment before both Heathers and Legally Blonde, which are infinitely better stage adaptations as far as I'm concerned. But then I saw the cast and then I was very much on board because both Renee Rapp and Aulii Carvalho are unbelievable talents, which they proved to be. And then Jaquel Spivey as well from A Strange Loop, which is a phenomenal stage show. That got me very, very excited.
He played Damien?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
So great. Yeah. So great.
You know, with this, I just kind of was like, yeah, it felt, you know, and as it got closer, you know, it really did feel like this play for nostalgia. But then, you know, I think, you know, something both that I experienced watching this and as it got closer is realizing that maybe it wasn't necessarily a nostalgia play and maybe it's just that we're old. And like when we were growing up and the things were taking place in the 80s and that, you know, and the 70s, it is just finally our time. It is finally our
Alonso,
time.
Alonso, can you, this young man.
Oh yeah, sorry. I guess she's using our.
The unmitigated.
BJ, it's our time.
Yes, I feel you.
It's our time.
How dare you?
And because watching it, which I guess I'll use this as the transition, it seemed like a good, like, because it's I wonder how y'all feel about this, actually, because in some ways it felt like it was like taking the period, and then in some ways it felt like it was trying to be of like the current time.
I will give them this. Like, as you know, the Heathers musical is like locked in the 80s very firmly in very style so. And other, you know, substance. But I think, you know, one, I will, you know, for all the reasons I think we didn't need this movie to exist, I will say that the 2024 Mean Girls absolutely incorporates social media and phones and the kind of stuff that is very relevant to what life in an American high school is like in 2024 as opposed to 2004 in a very shrewd way that feels organic. It doesn't feel sort of tacked on. It just is the way that people are communicating, that people are expressing themselves, that whatever. And so it fits in with all the stuff they're doing here. I also like the fact that we can just let Janice Ian be a lesbian already. And have the fact that the method by which she is outed by Regina can still be like something that is a shitty thing for Regina to have done while not demonizing the fact that she is a lesbian.
Yeah.
Definitely. Agreed. The thing that I find most fascinating about this, because the thing people forget a lot with teen movies is teen movies tend to be our most honest time capsules because they're trying to capture what is like the coolness du jour, like what is cool right here and now. They don't care about being timeless. And so to see how a lot of the jokes in this movie evolved, it is very much an of this era sort of approach to things. I'm going to quote a good comedian friend of mine, Liz Blanc, who was a teacher, where she says, Gen Z will respect your pronouns, but not you as a person. So that means bullying is going to be a very different approach than when, you know, I was a 14-year-old watching Mean Girls, where, yeah, bullying was just calling me a dyke in the middle of class. That's not the world we live in anymore.
Yeah.
That's a great point, because there's... Throughout this movie, there is a real element of inclusion. The casting consistently, it's brought up in the dialogue, either exploring characters or allowing them, like Janice, to be more forthright in their personhood and identity than the sort of subtext of the original. But also just who the dancers are. You know, I love it when there's body positivity in the dance troupe, and this studio, this is not the like Fame High School of just rail thin whippet sized people. You know, it looked like an actual high school. By that, I also mean, which this is how I actually know how old I am. Every single outfit in that, I was like, oh my gosh, that's hideous. All of the clothes. Everything. And that's how I was like, those must be really fashionable, because that's the ugliest thing I've ever seen.
And even the plastics, one of them is South Asian and one of them is Latina, you know. And so like there's definitely a thought of like what looks like 2024, you know.
Yeah. I did enjoy that. And I thought, you know, because we did just talk about The Color Purple, and I do love investigating how they're approaching choreography and taking something from stage to screen. This, I thought they did a fantastic job with utilizing as much of the space organically or whatever. There's a Halloween sequence that I love how they shot it. There's Janice's big song at the end. She's just weaving in and out of all these classrooms, and it felt frenetic and real. It felt like it was in real time. Fun fact, this is directed by a team who I programmed their first short episodic called Quarter Life Poetry at Sundance. Samantha James and Arturo Perez Jr. She created that, and he directed all of it, and they directed this together. And I was like, I recognize those names. How exciting. Oh, yeah. A little Sundance team. But I thought,
like we said, Drea doesn't keep the gate. She just happens to be there every time someone walks by.
I'm just high-fiving people.
She's standing there with a change belt.
No, I'm just like, you do good job. Oh, you got this one.
Did anybody have the impression, when you talk about the choreography and whatnot, like there's a definite, this was supposed to be on Paramount Plus feeling to this movie. Like, there's kind of a compression going on. Like, we're going to make sure this looks good on a tablet.
Yes. Yeah. No, I had that thought watching in the theater for sure. Because what was so interesting is that, like, the big opening number where Katie is transitioning from living in Africa to North Shore High School, the school sequence has very similar choreography to Grease 2, one of my all-time favorite movie musicals.
Because you're a school writer.
Yeah, it feels very much like the back to school version, but it is smaller. They don't have as many of these big sweeping wide shots because they're probably thinking this is going to be watched on a phone, like tilted to the side.
Which is very smart. But I still, I agree. I hadn't thought about that. And that is a very fun insight. But I still loved, I thought they took nice advantage. As someone who's always like, all right, we have four locations. Much like there's a Lindsay Lohan cameo in this. And I was like, oh, they shot her out in 2 hours. She's got like, they did like a master shot. They went in for her close-ups and they're like, all right, Lindsay's wrapped for the day. Everybody, congratulations. And then they went and did the rest of the scene. So, you know, I can't not love the production logistics. But I did think that they did the most with each of those spaces in a way that also felt very high school.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I highly agree. I also really like the numbers in this. And, you know, BJ, I'm just going to take it and say that you watch a lot of musicals, right?
Oh, I was watching the Company documentary before we got on, just casually.
You can let me know if this is a trend in musicals in general or if this is something they were doing. But it seems like, you know, in a lot of the current ones that we've seen, there's been this kind of implementing a more contemporary sound to show tunes and, you know, and making it sound more poppy, which I mean that in a complimentary way, not a negative way, which every niche music nerd tries to. Do you think that that helps? Do you think that it makes it timeless? What is your take on that?
So I think it really does depend on the show that you're doing. A show like Mean Girls needs to have pop elements incorporated into it because this is not a traditional show tune sort of story. Whereas like La La Land needs to be something that feels very grounded and kind of the classic approach to musicals because they're trying to capture different things. Because this is a high school story, it needs to sound like something that high schoolers would be into. And so a thing that changed dramatically that if people are not familiar with the stage show, they might not know, but Katie, her Anjuri Rice, her singing of these songs is a lot more toned down. It has kind of this like coffee shop tone to it, or the kids today call it singing in cursive. It's this very like stripped down approach to the songs versus in the stage show, Katie is a ball of anxiety and every song sounds like this. And she doesn't have that approach in here, which I think is a reflection of who are the big pop stars of today, where you have the Billie Eilish sound. So they're incorporating that, which I thought was, you know, it's really smart to make it work for this production. It does let it stand on its own, but it is then very different for the purists who were expecting, you know, these big belty numbers out of Katie, which we don't get in this. They actually took out a lot of songs for this, which I go back and forth on. Part of me is really upset that they took these songs out, but the other part of me knows that they needed a shorter runtime because you're catering to an audience that is counting down when they can open up TikTok again, and they probably only didn't because they incorporate TikTok into the movie.
They still got the second screen energy, even just on the one screen. Yeah,
exactly.
This is already pushing 2 hours, you know, which for a movie like this is, I mean, for a musical, it's shortish, but for a movie that is aimed at like 14-year-olds is, you know, kind of, you're right, put at the edge of what we can expect out of them.
The music, because like I said, it was brand new to me. In the bubble that I live in. What a revelation. But I've never heard the term singing in cursive, and that's perfect. And I did feel like the Katie especially had such a small, it was that kind of, oh, this is someone who I was in choir with who has a nice tone, but is not a soloist. Like that was kind of the thing for it. And because of that, both with the the music of it, but also the star power. The other thing that stands out so much here is this is so centered on Regina. Like, Regina mm-hmm. is much more the main character of this, whereas in the original film, it's this unexpected jolt of, ooh, the villain is the most fun thing to watch, but it's still Katie's story. And this one, you're getting... You have a lot of solo, not a lot of, but there's just so much more energy around the Regina, and it's the world that they're building, but it's also, I mean, the Renee Rapp of it. It's
yeah.
You can't not have that. She's such a force of nature.
Yeah, Renee Rapp was so amazing. You know, amazing singing. I was all into it. It's the performances. There was just so much fun in it. The homages. Could not, you know, talk about Renee Rapp. It is definitely when I felt old, when I looked up her age, realized she's 24. And I was like, wow, this is where we're at. When you see someone cute in a movie and you're like, I'm old as shit.
In a high school movie. You just said that. You know, we're recording.
Do you remember the ages of One Tree Hill? Those are grown ass.
That's fair. These are all going to be elderly people.
But, you know, also Ollie, who I definitely, when I went to the Wreck-It Ralph premiere and was like, my daughter watches you on Moana. Can we get a picture? Which made me, you know, it's to see her kind of so blossom good. Into this actress, you know, because, you know, it feels even like wilder because, you know, there's this thing where like you're kind of watching them kind of grow out of this, like, okay, you were Moana and this is the space you are. And now you get to be like the like edgy, like fun character in this movie. But I gotta say, truly, Jaquel Spivey, truly, I think, in my personal opinion, truly standout stole the show for me.
Oh,
I
feel yeah, like Cravalho and Spivey for me absolutely walked away with this movie.
Yeah, just their like throwaway lines that were just going to be like off jokes that just have you rolling, just little things that you know were probably improvised on the spot. It just brought it all together and just makes me excited to see them in more things.
Yeah. I would like them to be the Greek chorus, or not Greek chorus, but how they do the bookends of it. I'd like them to begin and end every film.
Yes. With that, I want to say, so we talk about, you know, stage to screen a lot on this. Like when you things as great as they are feel stilted, like offenses, and you're like, oh, I can tell this was a stage show. And musicals, I think, always in the history of cinema has had more fun to play. But this one, I really did like the way they implemented it, the way the backup singer dancer characters were just kind of always a part of it. Like in the Halloween scene, they're the ones who pop up on the site. They're the one on the tree. It kind of reminded me of like the first time I ever saw Little Shop, and you kind of see the gang kind of singing along. I just wanted to shout those out.
And I like Alonzo. those transitions from like the tent in Africa to the high school and back again, like are very much the kind of things you would see in a stage show. But I think that they did make them feel cinematic here. And I will say, like, as much as I love like Cravalho and Spivey, it's taking nothing away from the work that Lizzie Kaplan and Daniel Francese did the first time around. I think all of these characters are sort of operating in the shadow of 2004 and trying to figure out, like, how do I carve out a place to make these characters different and unique? And I think the two of them really come up with ways into these characters that felt like a different kind of scene stealing than their predecessors did. But, you know, like, the predecessors are still great. I want to put that out there. But I think they're the ones who kind of overcame the weight of history of this movie more than maybe more than anybody else did.
Oh, 100%. Well, I think it's time for us to vote. The way we vote for things on this pod is screen it being the highest, stream it being the next level, and skip it being pretty self-explanatory. Who wants to start?
I'm going to say stream it. I think this might have maybe could have lived on Paramount Plus. I think it's firmly okay and fine, but just I'm not like super jazzed about a lot of it. But it's entertaining enough. It's good enough. It's fun enough. And yeah, worth a look.
I'm going to say screen it. I loved this movie a lot more than I was thinking that I would. But also one of my like core memories, as they call it, was seeing the first Mean Girls with my own mother when I was 14. And I hope that more people can have that with their moms. More teenagers can do it and see it in the theater and have that little shared experience.
That's lovely.
Yes.
You too. I'm also a screen it. I thought this was so much fun. I very much enjoyed it. It made me want to learn the music. Again, just my theme of today. I like seeing people be good at things that make them happy. And there's a lot of joy that comes across in this. And they also do, if you are someone who knows the original really well, they do such a nice job of nodding or doing slight tweaks along the way that, like, you know, Damien's head, she doesn't even go here, like, with the hoodie. Like, there's little things that are just what you want to nod back, but it's not such a, like, you know, rigid recreation that you're not getting something new.
Yes, indeed. And yeah, I'm a screen it as well. Truly was a treat. Enjoyed watching it every second. 10 out of 10. Just fun experience. Yeah, I can't even stop singing praises. So that's mine for me. But yeah, we'll be right back after we hear from another show for Maximum Fun. So stay right there.
People say not to judge a fish by its ability to climb a tree.
Which is why here on Just the Zoo of Us, we judge them by so much more.
We rate animals out of 10 in the categories of effectiveness, ingenuity, and aesthetics, taking into consideration each animal's true strengths, like a pigeon's ability to tell a Monet from a Picasso, or a polar bear's ability to play basketball.
Guest experts like biologists, ecologists, and more join us to share their unique insight into the animal's world.
Listen with friends and family of all ages on MaximumFun.org or wherever you get podcasts.
Welcome back to Maximum Film. I'm your host, Ify Wadiwe. In the studio with me are
Alonzo Duraldi,
BJ Colangelo,
Drea Clark.
The original Mean Girls film was largely inspired by a book called Queen Bees and Wannabes by Rosalind Wiseman. Preposterously, that makes this the second week in a row that we've discussed a movie musical that's on its fourth respawn, after being a book, a film, and a stage musical based on said film. So let's pick what's next. What movie that's based on a book would make a great Broadway musical, and later, a movie musical? Or you can go all the way to version 1.0 and name a book you'd like to send on this magical four-part journey.
Can I bring up, obviously, I have to make the joke, our in-house joke, that of American Psycho, because I once said that we should turn American Psycho into a musical.
Oh, yeah.
And then a bunch of people were like, girl, that's already a musical. So please know, when we got this prompt, because this is development, this is half my job, I was like, this is a great question. What would I want to make into it? And I'm not kidding. Like, the first five things I came up with already have musical versions. Those are Little Women, The Remains of the Day, which I thought I was being so clever, has a musical. The Princess Bride, Hidden Figures, and The Devil Wears Prada. I was like, those are all great. I would like to see all the... someone else already had that thought. Don't worry. Somebody already had that thought. I did come up with two that I don't think are musicals, but I had to share that... Like, Little Women. Little Women would be a great musical. Anyway... Please make it big enough and bring it to screen again.
Since you said you like YouTube, you need to just type in Little Women Christopher Columbus compilation. That's all you need to look up. And it is just different productions of Little Women the musical of girls going, Christopher Columbus! And it is one of the funniest things in the whole world.
Okay, thank you. That's the exact kind of thing I love. I will definitely do that. Okay, I think... What I think and believe, and so again, Marissa, go copyright this. That's how it works. I think Crazy Rich Asians would make a fantastical musical.
Ooh, yeah, yeah.
I think you could do different styles with that, but it's already built, you know, it has set pieces. It has vibrant backgrounds. There's ridiculous reasons they're already dressed up. It's all right there. It's cooked in. But can I tell you, I would like someone on the more American Psycho side of things. I would really like to see a musical of Gone Girl. And that is not an exaggeration. Please bring me, give me the like lead character, whatever Rosamund Pike's character's name was, of like, I want an ingenue moment, a like, oh, I'm so coy, and oh, it's life is so
her,
hard.
Her I want number, I'm sure, would be great.
Yes. Oh, yeah. And then the whole flip of it, I just feel like, right? Can't you see it? Can't you see a musical version of that amazing shot of Ben Affleck smiling for a camera, looking guilty as hell, like as wanted pictures are behind him? He can be in the musical version or not. I just would really like someone with musical talent to please Gone Girl, Crazy Rich Asians, get to it. But I own the copyright, so talk to me.
Okay. Look, here's what I want is to have the Oppenheimer musical happen. And the same year that that musical comes, and
get out,
you know,
here,
a lot of the theater folks are really, really feeling it. Then there's the Godzilla Minus One musical to compete it. And everyone's like, actually, this is a better take on this thing that you're trying to have a take on.
I really thought you were going to say the Barbie musical, just dismissing all of the music that already exists in Barbie, which was going to be even funnier to me.
I'm gonna yes and Iffy's Oppenheimer suggestion, because this is a movie that I love that has been virtually forgotten. It's like it hasn't been on home video since VHS, and it's like one that I always throw out in like missingmovies.com conversations. But there was a film in 1990 that was a fiction film, but it was based on a nonfiction book by physicist Fritjof Capra. The movie's called Mind Walk, and the entire film is a long walk on the beach between a physicist, a poet, and a politician talking about the state of the world and the future of humanity. And if that movie, that's already a drama based on a nonfiction book, couldn't actually turn into a musical, I think it's so unlikely that it would be perfect.
I love
Mind Walk.
Mind Walk.
That fully, I was like, that's a book. You're describing a book. None of that sounds cinematic. Good for them.
Yes. It was Liev Ullmann, Sam Waterston, and John Hurd, with a brief appearance by Ione Skye. Yeah, this is a movie that I saw in the theater and has been like just, it's in a salt mine somewhere.
A salt mine. All right, Mind Walk. Mind Walk is amazing. Mind Walk sounds like equivalent to Tracy Jordan's Mind Grapes.
Bring us home, BJ.
I spent so much time thinking about this, and so here's, walk with me on this journey here. So one, I wanted
to mind walk with you, girl.
Mind walk with me. I wanted to fit the theme, so I was like, okay, a teen, something that's teen oriented, and a lot of teen stuff is based on classic literature. Like every teen movie you love, probably based on classic literature. Well, there is an 1865 novel by Mary Mapes Dodge called Hans Brinker or the Silver Skates, which was turned into the Disney Channel original movie from 1998, Brink, which is a rollerblading DCOM. And that would fit right in with the time-honored tradition of roller skate musicals.
I was going to say.
Like Starlight Express, Xanadu, and The Rink. But now we're going to blade. And I want this so bad. Like, once it came into my brain, I was like, I'm never, ever going to be able to get this out. And also, that's because Big Fish is already a musical, and it is incredible. And if you can listen to Norbert Leo Butz sing How This Ends from Big Fish, the musical, and not cry, you don't have a soul. So yeah, Brink. That's my pick.
Not only a brilliant idea, but can I tell you, I had never heard of Brink before this week, and you're not the first person to bring it up. Because the Deck the Hallmark guys are starting this new podcast called DCOM Descendants, where they're going to go back and rewatch all of the Disney Channel original movies, or in the case of Daniel, watch them because he was too old for them. And they were all talking about how if you don't like Brink, don't even talk to me. And yeah, I'm like, what is
this
movie?
It's legitimately incredible. It's wonderful. I am also like a minor league like DCOM historian. And Brink is one of like the big ones where when people are like, those are stupid Disney movies, I'm like, you shut your mouth, because we're going to watch LeVar Burton Smart House and we're going to watch Brink.
Okay, I need to
have you on this podcast.
Yeah. Every one of those movies, because I've never seen nor heard of them, I feel like are just I'm being pranked by whoever is currently speaking to me. Like, I think BJ and Alonso are in on this of like, let's convince them that Brink is a thing.
Listen,
I
swear Pixel to you, Perfect, already a musical, can't do it. Like, they have, they're Camp Rock, already a musical, can't do it. High School Musical, already musical,
and a TV series. A High School Musical is where I jump in on the DCOMs. I completely sat out this entire thing because I was, what, in my 30s by this point, probably? But yeah, Drea, for the kids, this was huge, you know, like cornerstone viewing.
Yeah.
I just missed it. As a babysitter, I probably parked them in front of it.
Disney movie that I thought was the one was True Confessions, which was starring Shia LaBeouf. And that one tore me up as a kid. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I'm with you on that one. Don't sleep on the Disney movies.
Is it a remake of the Robert De Niro, Robert Duvall movie?
Yeah.
You want something real scary? Watch Don't Look Under the Bed, legitimately scary kids horror. Like, there's so many good ones.
All right. Well, since we're talking about so many good ones, let's move on to our staff picks. It could be any movie at all. Who wants to start?
I'm going to piggyback on something that BJ mentioned earlier, which is there is a Heathers musical, and while they haven't made it into a movie per se, they did record a production that happened in London, and it's on the Roku channel. You can see the whole thing, and there are some fun aspects to it, and I like the performances, and I think there's some funny songs. I have to say that it does a thing that the Mean Girls musical also does that I feel like it tamps down the cruelty. They both kind of end in a we're all in this together, to bring it back to High School Musical aspect, that I think both the movies are a little cagier about committing to, the original movies in both cases are a little cagier about committing to the idea of like, okay, we're going to all be friends now, you know, I think the movies know better and the musicals are like, sure, we're going to leave you, you're going to leave the theater toe-tapping, and whether or not it's true.
Yeah.
I'm going to just turn hard into counter-programming. There's a movie coming out this week, but like in limited release, so if you can't see it, please just remember this, so when it is released digitally or on Blu-ray and physical media, called Totem. The director, Lila Aviles, and it follows a 7-year-old girl, and it's an all-in-one day film. She's at her grandfather's house. They're putting a surprise party together for her father, and all of these reveals and happenstance goes on while they're setting this up. That kind of takes over the family, but you're so in this girl's eyes. It's such masterful filmmaking. I think it's a really special film. And in case it is ignored by the Academy this week, which is announcing the nominations, even though it made the shortlist, support it. Totem. Small film. Check it out.
I went with partnership, double feature programming. So I am recommending a movie that hit Hulu in 2022 called Crush. It is the feature debut of Jewish non-binary queer director Sammy Cohen, who people might have seen making buzz last year for directing You Are So Not Invited to My Bat Mitzvah on Netflix with the Sandler family. But Crush is about a openly queer high school girl who joins her school's track team to avoid suspension. And she's like, you know what? This is my time. I'm going to finally tell the girl that I've had a crush on since, you know, elementary school how I feel, because she's on the track team. But the longer she's on the track team, the more she starts to get to know her crush's twin sister, who is played by Ali'i Cravalho.
Yes.
And
nice.
It is such a sweet rom-com. You also get Megan Mullally playing like a very sex positive mom, which I'm a huge fan of. This movie is very, very queer. It is also centered around a leading cast that is predominantly non-white, which I find very interesting. And we don't get a lot of coming of age teen rom-coms that, you know, hit a lot of those boxes. And it's very cute. It's very sweet and very cute. And no one watched it because it went direct to Hulu.
I didn't realize that was the same director. That You're Not Invited to My Bat Mitzvah was one of my staff picks. I can't wait to check that out.
Yeah, seconded on Crush. That's a great one.
Yes.
Iffy.
Yeah, you know, well, keeping with the same theme of getting someone who was featured in this film, well, Angourie Rice was in one of my favorite films of 2016, which is The Nice Guys with Ryan Gosling and Russell Crowe. So definitely check that one out, because that is my stuff.
It's so funny.
And it's Anne Gowrie, I learned.
Anne Gowrie.
Yeah, she said it rhymes with dowry. She says it rhymes with dowry or flowery.
Can I talk to you about this? Shout out to every person with a, you know, difficult to pronounce name who gives a rhyme. It's like, you know,
yeah.
With me, when people try and like, you know, they think they misheard Iffy, I hit them with one of these, a little wavy hand, be like, no, no, that's right. and Iffy Shakude or Demi Adijuibe, who said to say, it's like saying, did you eBay? Demi. Oh, did you eBay? I did you eBay. and, you know, Iffy Shakude, I feel like that rolls off the tongue.
Before I shorten my name because everyone said it wrong, my full name is Andrea. And I would say, oh, like, because you could say Andrea. Yeah. There's a lot of ways to say it wrong. So I would say, no, I'm tired. I'd like to sit Andrea. That's what
you
know, I
do the same because... with my last name, because people misread my last name as Colon Jello all the time, which is, you know, great when you're growing up. But the way that I used to explain my last name to my students when I was a teacher is think of your favorite Ninja Turtle. No, no, no. It's Michelangelo, but I'm not Michelangelo. I'm Ms. Colangelo.
Nice.
Oh, nice.
I like that you couldn't get enough of the last name stuff in school, so you went back to teach. You were like, let's get a new generation of takes on my last name.
But all my students also had wild names, too, so we understood each other.
Is that why you went with BJ, to sort of throw them off to the something else?
Well, because Brittany Jade's already a mouthful. We're already halfway there. Let's just make the joke on Front Street.
Now I feel bad that I've got no mnemonics. I'll have to go back to the lab and work on some.
Come on, Alfonso. Yes, Durante, hurry up.
Durhey.
All right, well, thank you to BJ Colangelo. Yay! Where can our listeners read or hear more from you?
I am on Twitter, Instagram, Blue Sky, TikTok at BJ Colangelo, and I also co-host the podcast This Ends at Prom with my wife Harmony. It is a coming-of-age podcast focusing on teen girl movies or movies marketed towards teen girl audiences from me, a staunch apologist, and my wife Harmony, who is transgender and missed all of them growing up.
Oh, I highly recommend. It's a great listen. Same.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. Thank you.
Yes. Andrea and Alonzo, thank you for another wonderful show. Always good to
Andrea.
See you.
Sir.
If you have a comment or suggestion about this week's show, you can leave us a message on our hotline at MaximumFun.org/hotline, or send us an email at MaximumFilm@MaximumFun.org, or find us on any of our social media channels that are all linked in the show notes. Next week, we're going to be talking about American Fiction, and our producer is the wonderful Marissa Flaxbart. Our senior producer is Laura Swisher, and this is a production of Maximum Fun. Bye.
Maximum Fun, a worker-owned network
of artist-owned shows,
supported
directly
by you.